Hey, it's Jeff and Jeremy from the Ultra Running Guys. And if you're here, you probably already know that we started this podcast to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey.
But what you may not know is that in addition to this podcast, we also host two live races in the Wilmington, North Carolina area that are designed to do the same.
Yep, the first is the Hydra, which takes place on April 20th and has a 50K individual, a 50K relay, and a half marathon option. Whatever option you choose, we promise that slaying the Hydra will be unlike any race that you've ever experienced.
And the second is the Final Countdown, which takes place on September 14th. And whether you've never run before or you're a hardcore ultra veteran, this race is designed to help you find your limits. And we will be there with you to help celebrate.
All right, so mark your calendars, share with your friends, and visit us at our website, theultrarunningguys.com, or check out the links in the show notes for more info.
And with that, enjoy the episode, and remember, when in doubt, just show up.
Literally, guys, it was so miserable. I remember looking down at the side of the trail, and I just wanted to lay down and cry. Like, I was like, I would be totally cool just to lay down and cry like a little baby right now and somebody just come pick me up. Like, it was that bad.
And welcome back to the Ultra Running Guys. You got Jeremy Reynolds and Jeff Winchester of the Ultra Running Guys. And the reason that we're here is to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey. As we always say, if it's your first time, thank you so much for taking the time. And if you find the value, share with your friends, give us the like, all that good stuff. If you're coming back, your family, we appreciate you absolutely more than you know. Right into the guest. All right. So our guest tonight has been on quite the journey. After a high school injury ended his sports aspirations, he found himself in a deep, dark hole fueled by drugs, alcohol, and self-hatred. And then, after losing his brother a few years ago, he hit rock bottom and decided he only had two options, suicide or faith. Luckily for us, he chose faith, and in December of 2022, his new path led him to his first 50K, followed by his first 100 miler a year later at the crazy tough Beast of the East 100 here in North Carolina. He has since launched his Run with Christ mission, where he plans to run a 100 miler in all 50 states, taking on the Massanutten 100 in May to check off the state of Virginia. So stick around while we chat with this coach and strength training gym owner about how he got here, what will keep him going, and how he plans to tackle 50 100 milers to carry forward his mission. And with that, Trey Morrison, welcome to the show, man.
Excited to be here, guys. Super excited to be here. What a great intro you threw out there.
Well, look, man, we're really excited about this conversation. We connected a little while back. We've been getting to know about you. Obviously, you're up to some pretty big things with a 100 miler coming up next month as we record, 2 months as we record this. But we're excited to talk about what comes after that, because this is kind of right at the beginning of this giant goal that you set. So we're interested in why. But as I mentioned in the intro, man, you've got a whole lot to your background. So I think the first thing we kind of want to do is get to know Trey, where you've been and how you got here. So I think a good starting point, take us back to your sophomore year. You had a major change point. I mentioned it, kind of the injury. You said it led you down a dark path. Tell us what happened.
Yeah. So pretty much my whole life, you know, I share this with people all the time that sports were really one of the only places I ever felt comfortable and confident in my life. And, you know, I was very self-conscious coming up. I was very athletic. And the only time I truly felt at home in my life and felt comfortable was on a baseball field, on a basketball court, and a football helmet. Like, those were the only places where I felt like I could truly be myself. Everywhere else out into the world, I was almost felt like I was faking my life, for lack of a better term. Well, fast forward to my high school football career, I ended up getting a pretty bad injury. I fractured a bone in my spine and had to be carried off the field. And the doctors at the time were like, you know, you're pretty much done. Like, you're not going to be able to do anything. You know, I went to physical therapy, did the things they asked me to do, and baseball season came around, which that was my main sport. I played baseball year round. That's what I saw in my future. That's really all I cared about in my life in general. And I was at tryouts. The coach pulled me to the side. He's like, Trey, I'm going to need a release note from the doctor. And I was like, okay, that's weird. You know, I already ran my poles. I'm like, man, you could have told me before I ran my poles for tryouts, but So I walk off the field, I go call the doctor's office, and I just remember the doctor being like, no, I told you, you can't play sports. And in that moment, my heart broke into a million pieces. And anybody that's played sports can relate. Baseball was my first love. Like, I'll never forget my dad teaching me how to play baseball. I never forget the grind of getting better, the driving an hour after school, doing homework to practice. Like, that was the thing I cared about most in life. So when I got that news, it was like my whole identity was just ripped out of my soul. And, you know, during that time, I was just a sophomore. So, you know, I was like, just took it for what it was. I didn't really question it. I remember I was very upset, probably said some words I wouldn't say now, and I sped off. And I just remember pulling up to my parents' house, crying my eyes out like a baby. And I just thought I was quitting school. I was like, I'm not going back to school. They said I can't play baseball. And, you know, my parents didn't really know how to react. And at the time, I just took everything for face value. I didn't try to dig in. I didn't try to say, like, why is this? You know, I'm not broken per se. And that was the day my life really, really started to change. Without school in the picture, I did end up quitting school. You know, my parents kind of let that happen. They didn't really know how to handle the situation. But after that, you know, my dad essentially told me, you know, when you turn 18 years old, you either got to get a job or go to school or figure something out. So I ended up getting my high school diploma, like taking the test, getting my high school diploma. But during that period, you know, I felt lost. This outlet that I had of sports was completely gone, you know. And looking back, it was a way I dealt with my emotions. It was a way that I found myself every day at practice, every, you know, on game days and all these things. Well, my brothers and I, we got wrapped up into a drug world at a young age. And I remember vividly, this is, you know, a little bit before this, I remember being younger and around these drugs. And I would tell the people that were trying to influence me to do these drugs, I'd say, I'm an athlete. Like, I don't do that. And I would always tell them that. They would always try to encourage me to do it. And I'm like, I'm an athlete. Athletes don't do that. And I remember one of them saying, like, oh, dude, I sell drugs to plenty of athletes. And like in my head, I was like, nah, like that's not going to be me. You know, well, fast forward about, you know, 2 to 3 years later, when I wasn't an athlete, right? That was what I identified as. Those people were still around. And one thing led to another. I found that same feeling that I got in sports. I found it through drugs, right? I found it through a quick fix. And it started out smoking weed, of course, drinking. I've been very open about this. That led to snorting cocaine, that led to just a lot of other things that I was just like, oh, I can escape life, essentially like I was escaping life as a kid playing sports, right? And I feel like to some degree, man, we're all escaping life in some form or fashion. Like everybody, if you look around, we all have some sort of outlet. And when that outlet was taken away, I had this other thing waiting on me. And my brother that, you know, I had lost, you know, that's a way that we bonded, just being completely honest with you guys. We did drugs together. And I want to be very open about this because I remember me and him going around out in public using drugs and looking at people and saying like, dude, I don't know how people can get through life sober. Like, I don't understand. Like, and we respected those people and we just saw ourselves as different. Like, man, there's no way we would ever be able to do that. And I always found myself, guys, like, when I would be up for days doing drugs, you know, there would be days where we'd be up, we hadn't slept, and trying to enter back into the real world was very, very challenging. It was almost like something or someone was trying to tell me, this is not the path you're supposed to take. You know, this is not the path you're supposed to take. I would get over it, get back into normal life, and I'd find myself back in that same exact loop again. And this was a kind of a never-ending cycle. But it's really odd as I sit here today with my Run with Christ gear on and my Run with Christ mission that I kept having this voice and something and trying to steer me away from this life. You know, I remember vividly telling people, guys, I'd say like, I'm not doing this forever. Like I would be around people doing drugs and I was the guy like, yeah, this is just a phase for me. And of course they're all like, yeah, us too, bro. Like, yeah, we're just in a phase too. You know, but I remember saying that and I remember being confident in that. Like there was a side of me that was confident in that. And then another side of me that was just like this scared little kid that like didn't know how to deal with life. You know, I didn't really know what to do, how to deal with life. And fast forward to 18 years old, I ended up getting a job working with my father. I worked my way up in this job all the way up into like a team lead management position. And all while doing this, I was using drugs, you know, and I was living this double life. People looked at me from the outside looking in, man, Trey, it was a good career, benefits, you know, the standard American thing that people's like, oh, he's doing good. And on the backside of that, you know, I'd be up all night at a drug dealer's house, but I'd be showing up to work the next day, leading my little team, progressing in my career. I never let that affect my work life. And it truly ate me alive inside. I think more so than somebody who you look at, and I could be wrong, that you're like, man, they don't got it together. You know, whereas people looked at me and they're like, man, Trey's like, he's doing good. He dropped out of high school. Like, he's got this good job. He's, you know, he's moving forward. And I knew people viewed me as that. And it was similar in school. I would, you know, before I had a football injury, I would hang out with the jocks and I would hang out with the druggies. And my brother only hung out with kind of the druggies and the outcasts. And I remember people looking at him a very different way. And people would look at me like, you know, I was somebody better, you know. And that was something else that really ate me alive, because I had this kind of show or this front in my life that, hey, I'm doing the right thing, right? I'm the athlete. I'm doing these things. But at that time, right, I was smoking weed. That was kind of the low-level thing before I got into the hardcore stuff. But as I talk about this every time, I just always come back to this double lifestyle that I've always lived. It's always been this, I was this athlete on one side, but the other side of me, like I couldn't cope with life, man. I couldn't understand how to cope with life and how to cope with my emotions going forward.
I appreciate you sharing all that sincerely. You said you started when you were 18, getting a little bit more into cocaine and everything as well. How long did this phase, I'm gonna call it a phase, if you will, last for you?
Years. That probably started really, I'd say around 17. And then 18 is just when I started having money. You know, that was really the big difference. You know, I had a job and I lived at home. But this went on for multiple years. And then the smoking weed probably started at, I don't know, 16, kind of just here and there. I started smoking cigarettes then as well. I smoked a pack and a half of cigarettes for 6.5 years. But I would say anywhere from the first time I started smoking weed till completely stopped, I mean, man, 4 years at least.
And how did it come to an end?
That's a really good question. The hardcore stuff came to an end because I started realizing how hard it was to enter back into life. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, like, if I was up for days on drugs, it was like trying to re-enter and try to be the man in my career just became so grueling. And I remember telling my brother, I was like, I don't know how much longer I can do this, man. But the other side was like, that's how we hung out. That was like what we did for fun, you know? And that just kind of, it kind of finally went by the wayside. Now, smoking weed was something that stuck with me for a very long time. And it's funny you say that. I made a post today. I said, something's holding you back in life, guys. Whether it's overeating, whether it's a vice, whether it's smoking weed. And it's a big message that I talk about now is for us to truly step into our authentic full self, man, all that stuff has to go to actually realize who we truly are. So the hardcore stuff, like I said, it kind of just went away. There wasn't like this come to Jesus moment with the hardcore stuff. It was just like, dude, I just don't know how much longer I can do this. You know what I mean? Almost like the fun was over with it.
Yeah. The reason I ask is because since you mentioned that you and your brother were both using together and you're having this own kind of angst, if you will, about having to reengage life, how did that work with your relationship with your brother as you were trying to move out of it, or at least feeling like you need to move out of it? I'm assuming that he was not.
It completely destroyed our relationship. That's such a great question. Yeah. So we went separate ways. Mm-hmm. We went separate ways in life. And that was really hard. That was a really, really hard thing. And he did not like me for that, did not enjoy that part. And that was probably one of the things that kept me around more than anything longer, you know, was knowing that our relationship, not as a child, we were best friends growing up. I mean, but like, as we got older, that was like what our relationship was founded upon. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a really great question. And that's exactly what happened. We had to go separate ways in life.
It's got to be rough. You got to be rough.
Yeah, it was very challenging. And, you know, that really takes us to the point of when he was killed, our last occurrence, mine and his, we literally got in a fist fight, you know? Mm-hmm. And this is, we're talking childhood best friend. I mean, like we're less than a year apart. Like we grew up, we did everything together. And then, you know, you bring that point up of how one's trying to get out of this drug world and the other's still there, you know, where you have to separate. You can't, I didn't have enough discipline in my life and I was not removed enough from that life to be able to be around that and not partake in it. And yeah, our last instance together, we got in a fist fight. Police were there, firefighters were there. And then the very last time we talked, we were going to see my best friend who is buried at the same cemetery he is. We got in a grueling argument and it was just over silly stuff. But I mean, some of the things we said to each other, I still can't repeat to this day. It was some of the most harsh things ever. And that was actually the last conversation that we had until I got the phone call that he was murdered.
Gosh, man. Well, one, I mean, I'm going to echo it. Thank you for being open. Thank you for talking. Obviously, community is a big thing to us. And the reason is because of the connection, right? So you've touched on so many, not just the subject, but you've touched on so many things that, you know, we as ultra runners tend to be kind of a different kind of group, right? And I would say there's probably a lot of people listening that really connected when you talked about a identity change, an identity being pulled away from you, whether it's through relationship, whether it's because of a change in circumstance, whether it's because of, I don't know who I am anymore. And then also moving down a path where you're trying to replace that with something, right? But you just hit on something big, man. So you come to this moment, you've been through this journey, your brother gets murdered, and we didn't know that detail, right? We know what we saw was lost my brother. But it sounds like that was just a, I'm assuming this collision that happens. You've been on the path. You're thinking about removing. He's gone. You have to deal with the situation you just talked about and the way that all that ended. Talk us through, how does that conversation go with yourself? Because like I said in the intro, the way you said it to us was, man, there was two things on the table. Is this the end of my road? Or I have this other option. And one of the things I thought was really interesting, because the way you put it was, you said, I was at the brink of suicide and had two options, kill myself or try to follow and accept Jesus. And one of the things we were talking about is, hey, especially you had mentioned being an atheist, is it's interesting, or one of the curiosities is, how does that become the other choice, right? Because there's lots of potentially other choices, but I'm interested, man. Talk us through how that is and where you went from there.
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. So when I got that phone call, as you guys could imagine, that completely destroyed my life. I felt like, this is the way I explain it to people, like something came down and took my soul out of my body. You know, all the flashback cards, you know, if anybody's ever lost anybody close to them, it truly is this very spiritual experience. And to back up a little bit, my brother and myself were atheists. We had some negative experiences in church at a young age. And we were actually, guys, I want to be very open about this. We were not only atheists, but we were the guys that, like, if somebody tried to come up and talk to us about Jesus, like we were kind of hateful to them. You know, we're like, are you kidding me? Like, I always thought following Jesus was for weak people, you know, and that's no harm or no foul to anyone. But some of the people, quote unquote, role models that were in my life at church at a young age, they didn't embody any principles that I would see as somebody that follows a strong man like Jesus. You know, so I just want to kind of preface this conversation with that. But after that deep, dark depression, you know, I lost my brother, felt like my soul was ripped out of my body. I own my own business, of course. I own the Strength Compound. We've been in business for 5 years now. And luckily, my brother and best friend, Brandon McDowell, he kept the place running because I was done with everything. I had all these people that counted on me, man. And I didn't care about any of them. Like, I was like, I'm done with life. I don't know what to do. Probably a 2 week period went by where I didn't even bathe. You know, I didn't get out of bed hardly. Everybody around me was, of course, very worried, which created another guilt cycle for me. And what I mean when I say that is, I had all these people come into my house because I'm blessed, man. Like, I get to be in a lot of people's lives. Like, our gym is just this pillar in our community. I've gotten to impact a lot of kids. And here I have these people come into my house. I don't even want to see them. You know, I'm like, I literally don't want to see anyone. I don't want to talk to anyone. And the 2 weeks go by, I finally like start taking a shower, try to get my life, you know, try to get myself together. The funeral goes by, which, you know, was another really hard time for me. And everybody that saw me at the funeral said that my eyes just looked like an empty shell, you know, and that's exactly what I felt like. I felt like an empty shell in life. And I ended up getting a psychiatrist and a therapist. And I had a therapist named Aaron, and Aaron changed my life. And this is exactly what he said. He said, "Brother, I can't do nothing for you." It was a Zoom call just like this. I'll never forget. He said, "Brother, I can't do nothing for you, but I know somebody who can." He said, "Jesus Christ saved my life." He said, "I have overdosed 7 times. I lived a double lifestyle of smoking crystal meth for 27 years. I've been Narcan back to life 7 times, and Jesus Christ saved me." He said, "I know you don't believe in Jesus, Trey." And as he's saying this, when he tells his testimony to me, guys, in the back of my head, I'm like, dog, if Jesus saved you, I ain't done nearly that much. Like, surely he can save me. I mean, that was like the conversation in my head. Like, already then, I'm like, I felt so bad. I was like, well, bro, if he helped you, like, surely he can help me, you know? And he asked me to do a couple things. He said, "Trey, I know your belief system now." He said, "But man, I just asked you to start listening to worship music. Find a church to go to." He said, "Can you do that for me?" I said, "Yeah." Up until this point, I'm atheist, man. He told me that. And I did what he asked, man. I reached out to my brother, Brandon. I went to church with him for the first time in a very long time. It was to the extent, guys, I have vivid memories of in my office at my old house. I would be on my floor crying, so depressed, with K-Love Radio on, trying to accept Jesus into my life, and also verbally saying out loud, "This is silly. There's no way this is going to work." But just completely just a broken man, broken into a million pieces, the tough guy, the guy that's always getting after it, like just worship music blaring, nobody home. And I'm literally verbally saying, guys, I need this to be very clear to everybody listening. I am saying this isn't going to work. Like, this is silly, but I have no other option. So Aaron's the one who planted the seed about Jesus in my life. And since, man, I hope this podcast finds him somehow. I haven't been able to get back in touch with him. I haven't gotten in touch with him, but I know one day we will. So that's how we got to the crossroads of suicide or faith, because I was at a point in my life where I had zero other options. You know, I had a psychiatrist at the time. She prescribed me antidepressants for just trying to cope with life. And I wasn't using drugs at the time, but I found myself taking, you know, nearly my whole prescription within a week. You know, so I mean, I wasn't using drugs in quotation marks. They were just written by a doctor, right? But it got to the point, guys, I had all my stuff in my car. Like, I actually went to go kill myself. Nobody knew this. I drove to a place out in Salisbury. I don't know why I was drawn to Salisbury. My brother and my mom lived there prior. I locked everything in my car. You know, I took a book down to the water with me where I was planning on drowning myself. I just left the hospital from seeing my mom. And I had a book called Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis. And one of my friends gave me that book. And anybody that doesn't know C.S. Lewis, he was one of the world-renowned atheists. He's since Christian, and he's got, that's one of my favorite books. And I'm just sitting there at the water flipping through these pages. And then I have these flashcards flying through my head, literally, of all these faces, of all these people I've impacted, of all these people that count on me, of all these lives that I've changed, of all these lives that I'm going to leave questioning. And I sat there for 20 or 30 minutes, man, and I ended up getting back in my car, obviously, and going back home. And from that point forward, I really poured into my faith. You know, that point forward was, you know, when I went to church with my brother Brandon and his family. You know, it's funny how God works, man. We had this Pastor Bobby preached that day, and I felt the Spirit of God come from this man's mouth into my heart. And he was such a massive impact on my life. So much so that when we moved into our new location, our new gym location, he came and blessed the facility. You know, when he's in town, he stops by. And just God had this thing lined up for me, man. He put Aaron in my life, right? And then I go meet Pastor Bobby. I go to church with Brandon. And it was just this sequence that just followed suit that has just lit my spirit on fire. And once again, why I'm sitting in front of you guys, which with the Roman Christ gear on and the mission in life.
Well, I think that's going to kind of take us to the next piece of this. But I just want to say, man, especially, so this is our first time talking, right? This is our first time kind of, I know it's not face-to-face, but over a lot of information. You're a guy with big goals. And so it's so hard when you kind of see from the outside. And obviously, don't take any offense to this, right? But sometimes when people talk big, it's like, oh, it'd be interesting to see how they carry this out. Is this something they're just kind of thinking about? Whatever. Did the focus that I see in you the way you carry yourself, how sure you are of the person you are today. One, it's inspiring, but two, it actually almost catches me a little bit off guard. Cause I'm like, oh man, here's a guy. And now hearing the story, who is rebuilt from the ground up. And I'm glad that we've all got a chance to just hear that story, right? Because regardless of anybody's faith listening, what your take is on that, to understand what you've been through, how it's gotten you to this point. And then we're going to talk about these awesome big goals that you've got. Hopefully that sets the foundation for everybody listening and get some context, because it really gets me excited about the next piece. So then the real question becomes, all right, so you've been on this journey. Now you're on the Ultra Running Guys podcast, right? How does running come into this next phase of your life?
Great question. So running actually started with me, because my background is obviously strength training, hypertrophy training. I do not look like a runner. Actually, I was on a call with my coach today and she's like, oh, you think you could tone the weightlifting down a little bit? And I'm like, no, not right now. I'm not ready for that. But
for everybody listening, when he says, I don't look like a runner, it means he's jacked. So just picture that.
So I was into powerlifting for a while. I actually coached some competitive powerlifters. Brandon, I'll mention again, who is my dear brother. He competed at the national level. So that was kind of our bread and butter, was hypertrophy and strength training and things. Well, I had a client that wanted to run a 5K. And while I was preparing for a powerlifting competition, I was like, dude, let's do it, man. And we made up this mock 5K in our town, man. And it was miserable. It was absolutely, I remember I'm 175 pounds now. I was about 205 at the time, like not running. And we did this 5K and it was miserable. And it's funny how I say that now, because a lot of the best experiences in my life came from running. And a lot of the absolute most miserable experiences in my life came from running. And I always find myself back there. So that was the entry into running. So then I kind of, it's like, man, I really enjoyed that. So I started running some more, you know, did some 5Ks, some half marathons, things like that. And I actually ended up getting a stress fracture and I couldn't run anymore. So at the time I was like, man, I'll start doing triathlon. Right. So I got into triathlon training for a little bit, and triathlon training is actually that led into when my brother was murdered. So I started running a little bit, did some triathlon. My brother was actually murdered. This is a piece I left out. The week of my triathlon was the week he was murdered, that Monday. And I obviously didn't do the triathlon. So that kind of, you know, put a sour taste in my mouth for that. And then I just found myself back running again. It was just something that always felt good. It was always leaned into. Did some marathons. And I want to make sure that this point gets across. Before I accepted Jesus Christ in my life, guys, before Jesus literally took my heart and turned it upside down. And I mean that's exactly what it feels like. I was running a marathon. I was like 20 miles in. And I remember trying to talk to myself and be like, dude, like beat myself up essentially to run faster. And it was like, I couldn't get the words out in my head. And it was really weird, which led me to this other identity crisis, because I fueled everything in my life through self-hate, guys. Everything, my whole sports, growing my business, building my business, running, lifting. And it was like, oh, dude, Jesus is not going to let you do that anymore, bro. Right. And that was, and I remember I was going and seeking mentorship to pastors, guys. I was like, am I like losing my mind? And they're like, no, dude, like you, like I can just see the change in your heart. Like just accept it and roll with it, you know? So did those marathons, man, couldn't fuel it off self-hate anymore. And I was like, man, I wonder what an ultra marathon would be like. Right. So I did my first marathon, and 4 weeks later I had my first 50K. My first marathon was one of the most miserable experiences of my entire life. Probably everybody has been through this if you ran a marathon. Come out, dude, the start line, super high energy. Like, it's like a party, man. I did the Greensboro Cannonball Marathon, and I'm like, man, this is sweet. So sweet that I ended up running with this chick for like 12 miles who is way faster than me, that I should not have been running with. But somehow, with the energy, I carried on a conversation with her. Mile 16 gets here, and I just start falling apart, man. I mean, falling apart. It was the most drudgerous, like, last 10 miles. Recover from that. And my knee was really banged up. Knee was super, super banged up. It was swollen. And I had this ultra marathon 4 weeks later. So I couldn't train this whole 4 weeks. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to back out of the ultra. Well, ever since I lost my brother, man, I kept finding myself, I couldn't commit and follow through to anything. Like, it kept happening. I, like, that running that marathon is like, Trey is back. Like the guy who sets goals and does things is back finally. So 2 days before this ultra marathon, I'm like, dude, I can't do it. My knee, I haven't ran for 4 weeks. And I remember talking to Brandon once again. And I made a video. I'm like, dude, that's the old me. Like, if I don't do this, I'm going to be just like that guy who can't finish things again. Right. And so I couldn't let myself not do it. Do the 50K, miserable experience. Literally one of the most miserable experiences of my life. I know I wrote in the email to you guys, there's a section called Mambo Loop. At mile 22, my whole right leg was swollen up. I literally could not bend my knee. My other leg was killing me. I get 2 miles off course. I had to go 2 miles back the other way. And man, I literally, guys, it was so miserable. I remember looking down at the side of the trail and I just wanted to lay down and cry. Like I was like, I would be totally cool just to lay down and cry like a little baby right now and somebody just come pick me up. Like it was that bad, you know? And I remember getting to the last aid station, 7 miles out. And it was called Mambo Loop. I remember, and the aid station crew, you know, usually they cheer you on, right? Like I've done enough ultras now, like they're trying to get you out of there. Okay, this experience, like when I get to this aid station, they're very concerned. Like they see me hobbling up down the road and I'm just like, guys, how much longer, man? How much more do I got to go? They're like, about 7 miles, man. You got to take Mambo Loop, man. And then you'll come back out and come back by us. And I'm just like, I look at them. They're like, can we get you anything? I just started hobbling, dude. Because I knew if I said that they could get me anything, like they even offered, they're like, you can drop out now and drop down to the shorter race. I mean, it was not the typical aid station where they're like, and to their right, I was really, really banged up. I don't remember how long, guys, it took me to peg leg hike that 7 miles. But when I got to the finish line, I mean, pretty much everybody was gone. You know, it was pretty much all over. But I was like, I'm finishing this thing. I don't care if it doesn't matter if everybody's gone, if the race is over, I will get this 7 miles in. And there were multiple times, I want to be very clear, throughout that 7 miles where I wanted to lay down and cry like a baby. But we did it. So that was my first ultra marathon experience. And to this day, the hardest part of an ultra marathon I've ever been a part of. And since then, you know, I've ran some other 50Ks. I've done a 50 miler. And then, you know, that led up into Beast of the East 100. But that was the first ultra experience.
So one, I'm sure everybody listening, but if you come up to an aid station and the volunteers are like, man, I don't know. Like, you may want to second guess what you're about to do, right?
Because 100%.
You don't hear that often. But so we had a question though. So why? So yeah. You mentioned you ran 5K and stuff. A lot of people were like, hey, how fast can I get? What was it about ultra specifically that drew you in, especially after a terrible experience, right? But why longer? Why not something else?
Oh, that's easy, bro. Cause I'm slow, man. And I'm like, well, I could suffer longer. You know, like I'm not some genetically gifted runner by any means, you know, and I'm very new to running too. So it's been really fun to get faster and things like that. But I'm not one of those guys that, you know, did their first marathon and it was 3 hours flat or whatever. So I'm just like, hey, I'm pretty good at suffering, man. I think I really like the idea of going longer. And not only that, the woods and the nature, man, are really important to me. I really feel free out there. My brother was very, very into nature. And ever since losing him, I really connect with him out there and connect with God out in the woods as well. So that was another huge, huge point for me for doing the ultras.
So let me ask a question about that. There's a lot of things that drive people in ultras that motivate them. There's a lot of different whys that kind of propel them forward and stuff. You mentioned earlier that you dealt with self-hate a lot throughout the years. And when you get into a low point and you're in this, I'm going to go back to Mambo Loop, or I think you said it was Mambo or Mambo Loop, a 7 mile stint where you're questioning life and questioning your existence and questioning whether or not you should even survive this moment, right? It's a low point. And if you deal with self-hate or having dealt with self-hate for so many years, like how did you work through that without like wanting to just be so angry at yourself the entire time and question everything about yourself? Like self-hate is this negative connotation that there are things about us that we just don't like. And when we're in a low moment, it just tends to be evidence of why we hate ourselves and that we seem to be, oh, well, that was right. I should.
That's a great question. The reason that I didn't lean on that during that point is because the only reason I did that race is because I was terrified of being the quitter I turned into after losing my brother. So it didn't even need to be self-hate. You know, there is a fine line, right, in ultras of pushing yourself so hard where you get super injured and like literally you can't run for weeks, months, maybe a year, you know. But that race was something so much different for me because, like I said, before the marathon, guys, I couldn't even stick to a week of workouts, like a week of lifting weights, you know, after losing my brother and trying to come out of that hole. So Mambo Loop for me, I was just like, I'm not a quitter. I'm not that guy. Like I had already done the marathon and proved that to myself, but I just knew it was like, if any piece of me, if I did not finish that race, I just saw the depressed guy who couldn't get out of bed again, right? Who couldn't take a bath, you know, who couldn't take care of his priorities. I was so fearful of turning back into that. That's what fueled me and got me through that race.
Forging a new identity. We've talked several times that oftentimes, and I don't just mean running on our feet, but literally the way we move through life, right, is that we're either moving towards something or moving away from something. And often the away is, you know, much associated with fear. And it sounds like, you know, you just use the word afraid, that can be a pretty big motivator, especially when you're trying to forge a new identity. So that makes a lot of sense to me. So, okay. So you already mentioned it. So the Run with Christ project, and we talked about it in the intro. So how did that first idea come about, or how did this idea come about? And did it start with a 100-miler in all 50 states, or what's the evolution of the Run with Christ project?
Yeah, man. I feel like I brought this up so many times. This is what I'm really passionate about sharing and talking about, man. So actually that marathon, the one that I was talking about where I tried to fuel myself off self-hate and it wouldn't really work. I literally got to the finish line of that marathon and I felt empty. I was like, man, like, why do I even do this? Like, I was really questioning a lot in my life about physical activity. I actually think I have a post on my social media about, I think I'm in a new season of life where this physically active guy that's always done these things, the gym owner, where there's going to be something different, you know, going forward. And, you know, I was obviously praying and in my scripture and all that. And God really placed upon my heart as like, dude, you have this ability to suffer. I mean, for lack of a better term, and you have this vessel that I've gifted you. And what if we use this for a greater purpose, right? What if, hey, Trey, running a marathon, ultra marathon for you doesn't matter anymore. Like it doesn't. Like that kind of went away. Like doing all these things for myself, right? You know, I love take up your cross, deny yourself and follow me. It's very similar to that. So I was like, man, how can we take this and honor God and show, you know, I shared with you guys, I was at a point in my life where I didn't bathe for 2 weeks. And now we're talking about running 100-mile races. It's like, how can I take this running thing and honor God with it? And I just kept praying about it. And I write a lot. I journal a lot. And I was like, Run with Christ Project is what it turned into. So I was like, you know what? We're going to do a 100-mile race. And it's to share what Christ has done for me in my life. You know, what he's, you know, going from the point of suicide and depression to the dude who has always got a big old grin on his face, you know, to the point of at my last ultra, this one lady, she said, you were smiling the whole time. I was like, that's because I'm running with Christ, you know, complete opposite of the guy that was like mean mugging, doing all the sports and things like that. So we put a race on the calendar for the Run with Christ project. I put a 50-miler on the calendar and then signed up for Beast of the East 100. And hired a coach Ann Tisdale from CTS. And she kind of knew the mission behind it, but it was to, hey, I'm going to do this 100-mile race. And I want to tell people that like, dude, you can go from not bathing yourself for 2 weeks, your life's not over, to like 100-mile race, because I couldn't think of anything more opposite than that. I don't know if you can get more opposite ends of the spectrum than those two things. Right. So do the 50-miler. I trained. I'll never forget. My coach told me, she said, I wish we had about 6 more weeks. I was like, well, we don't, you know, but trained really smart for the 50-miler Pilot Mountain Hanging Rock. It was a great course and actually crushed it. Kept it RP 4-5 the whole race, man. There was never a point of that massive suffering like the 50K. And Brandon, who was like the crew chief there, he was like, yeah, dude, like every time you came in, you're just like smiling. And like, he's like, he's doing good, you know? So I did the 50-miler, which led up into Beast of the East 100. And just to preface this again, you know, the mission of the 100-miler was purely to show what Jesus has done for me in my life. And some interesting things happened right before this 100-miler. I'm not going to get into a whole lot of detail about those things, but for short story, I ended up having to live out of my gym during my peak training block. So here I was, finding myself really close to this race, sleeping in an air mattress in my office at my gym. trying to find a new place to live. And we're probably 4 weeks out and I didn't have a crew. You know, like here we are about to embark on this 100-mile ultra marathon. Like, I don't know what I'm doing at the end of the day. Like, I have a coach, we're training, but as you guys know, there's a lot of variables that go into it. So I think 3 weeks out, a guy reached out to me on Instagram and his name's Rhett Bullock. Young guy, he's going to crush the ultra world too, man. He's such a great young man. But he reached out, he's like, he just finished the URI 100. He's like, hey man, do you need help with crewing or pacing? I'm like, dude, that'd be great, because I'm not going to lie, bro. We have no idea what we're doing. And it's just going to be me and Brandon. And Brandon can't run 50 miles to pace me, you know? So we got him locked in. And then a local guy, his wife trains at my gym. He's like, oh, dude, I helped a buddy out in Colorado with a 100-mile race. And you need some help. And I was like, that'd be great. So here I am now going from like living in my gym, a little stressed out in life, of course, peak training block, no crew, to all of a sudden I got these three guys with me. So we show up to Beast of the East, man, and I hooked them all up with a Run with Christ hat. We got some running hats, and never met Rhett in person, right? And he paced me from mile 50 to mile 69. And if you want to get to know somebody, you've never met them, there is no better way, dude. You have them come pace you for 19 miles at an ultra marathon you've never met. It is the best thing ever. And what was so beautiful is when I picked Rhett up as a pacer, it was hours of talking about Jesus and our faith, authentically. Pick up the next pacer, Justin, and same thing. He tells me his testimony. And this isn't me asking him these things. Like, this is authentic conversation of like, hey, our camp that we got set up, they're just sitting back there talking about Jesus, their faith, their families and life. So here I am just, you know, trucking through the mountains up here, just talking about Jesus with these guys that I really didn't even know. And really the race went actually really, really well. It wasn't until mile 75 until like things were like starting to hurt. Like my right calf started swelling up. But pretty much up until mile 75, man, we were doing great. We had a good race so far. And I remember picking up my last pacer, which was Brandon, the last 10 miles. And when I came in at mile 90, that was when, like, dude, the lights were on, but nobody was home. Like, Brandon's son, Hudson, man, is like the cutest little kid ever. And I remember him talking to me, and it was like words were, I could physically see words, and they were just like bouncing off my head. Like, I was hallucinating. Like, I couldn't really come to my senses. And I sat down, and we had 10 miles to go. And everybody's like, it's just 10 more miles. Well, for anybody that doesn't know, Beast of the East is a 25-mile loop, essentially. So I knew exactly what this next 10 miles entailed, and I knew exactly how my body felt. Well, Brandon and I take off, you know, and obviously I'm in a lot of pain. But the real point I wanted to share with mine and Brandon's experience through this 10 miles is he's pretty much bragging. He's like, dude, have you heard Justin's testimony? Like, have you heard what Jesus has done for him? I'm like, yeah, dude, like he told me, like, were you guys sitting back at camp talking about that? He's like, yeah. So it was just this another, like, this spiritual thing of, like, there's no coincidence in the kingdom of God, you know? And once again, you know, wherever anybody's at on their religion scale, there are no coincidences in this. If you hear the story leading up to all this, you hear the having no crew. You then hear having this crew of brothers that, like, it's nothing but, hey, we're talking about literally running with Christ as we're running. Just authentic conversation about our walks with Jesus, our families, you know, things we're going through. And we obviously complete that 100-miler, and I could not have completed that 100-miler without this band of brothers. There's no way. I wouldn't have wanted to, honestly, you know, and that was like the Run with Christ project, was to honor God in that 100-mile race. And the recovery from that was really grueling. For those who don't know, recovering from a 100-mile race is very, very brutal. Before I go any farther, do you guys have any questions about the race or anything?
No, okay. I appreciate you taking the time to kind of walk through your experience, but we loved hearing that. I mean, that you've actually answered a lot of the questions we would have had about your experience already. And so when it comes to your Run with Christ project or mission that you're working on, that was race number one, you know, and you still have 49 states to go, right?
Amen.
Amen. And so one of the things that when we've talked about, you know, having you on the show, we love the idea that you have this massive mission ahead of you. You know, it's one thing to say, I'm going to run 100-miler or even run 200-milers in my lifetime, right? And say, I'm going to do this because of my faith, because it's a mission. I want to kind of spread the word of God. And that can be a cool mission for most people just to do one. You, like I said, you have 49 to go, 49 different states. Next on your list is the Massanutten 100. And then after that, I think you said in the email, you're targeting the Pinote, or however you say that. It's in Alabama. And so that's the other one. So when you begin to lay this mission out and this plan out, how do you see, I mean, the obvious question for people who are looking to do in 50 hundreds in 50 states, and you are 28 years old, you know, you're going to do two a year, three a year. Like what's the long-term plan here? Like how many are you looking to do a year?
I love that. I love that question. So actually me and my coach are talking about this today. So this year we're doing two. So Lord willing, I want to preface all this by saying, guys, the number one mission is to share the love and the life of Jesus Christ. The number one mission is not for trade necessarily to run 50, 100 milers. Now that is a vehicle that I'm using to do that, right? And I say Lord willing, because I truly don't know if my body can hold up for that. I literally have no idea. But I know if it's in God's will, and I know if that's the mission that I'm supposed to be on, he's going to see it through as long as I do what I'm supposed to do. Now, this year we're doing two 100s. So we have Massanutten, two mountainous 100s, Massanutten 100, and then we're doing Pinhoti in Alabama. And actually, my coach and I were just getting off the call today. As soon as Massanutten's over, we're planning the full race calendar for next year. And actually, the goal is to do six next year. So we're going to do six, pretty much one every 8 weeks is our mission. And then really the goal is to build on that year after year. So we did one last year, two this year. And then once again, Lord willing, we're going to put six on the calendar for next year. And if we can get this body to hold up, we're going to see how many more we can do. And I'll be honest, you guys had a guest on, I can't remember his name, but he was going for like the 100-mile world record or something. And he was doing insane amounts of 100-milers. And I'm like, oh, cool. But, you know, I hear these stories. There's so many of these inspiring human beings. I'll be honest, Paul Johnson right now, super inspiring. I'm like, dude, run with Christ van running across America. Like that sounds sick too, right? So essentially we're going to push this body, this vessel that God gave me to the absolute limits, you know, and to the absolute limits to once again, share the love and the life of Jesus Christ and what running with Christ really is, you know. And I think the ultra space, guys, is such a beautiful place for this, because I think the ultra space draws a lot of people who struggle with mental health, who struggle with self-worth things, who struggle with maybe body image, who struggle with just so many things, whether it be depression, anxiety, because running is this beautiful tool that gives us clarity in life. My brain is like a bouncy ball most of the time. Like I was diagnosed with ADD, like I think everybody in modern day time has some form of ADD, ADHD. I think it's about impossible not to. But the only reason I share that is like when I'm running with no headphones, that is one of the only times in my life where there's no thoughts going on in my brain. You know, 100-mile race with no input, 50-mile race with no input. It's like just pure peace in my mind. And it's this magical experience I share too with, you know, you run when the sun's coming up. It's just a spiritual experience to me every time. You know, there's a saying that I love putting out into the world, darkness breeds creation. The suicide, that was my darkness that bred this creation of me getting to talk to you guys right now, of me leading a Bible study at my gym, of me preaching every Sunday to a men's group. And it's the same thing when we go through our ultra running journey, right? The dark times that we go through, it creates that new individual, that new person we're trying to meet. And to tie this back into the Bible, right? God said, let there be light. What does that actually mean? That means that darkness was here first. And I want to share that message with everybody to encourage anyone listening that if you are in darkness, if you're in it right now, or maybe you're not in it right now, but you will go through it, just know that creation is on the other side. And it's nothing but a part of your purpose. And it's exactly how God designed us to live. We go through these dark times to recreate ourselves. And I think ultra running is just a beautiful example of that.
Powerful stuff. Yeah, I agree with that. And I'm going to circle you back to what you said, though, when you said you're going to do six hundreds and you're going to do one every 2 months.
Yeah.
And I think having faith and your faith driving you in this mission is definitely going to be a powerful thing that can give you something to lock in on for a why, for a passion, or however you want to kind of wordsmith this, if you will. But when it comes to the physical and mental fortitude to be able to take 100 every 2 months, what do you think it's going to take to move you forward physically?
Physically, that's a really good question. I think just the general adaptations of all the training leading up until then is going to be huge by itself. My coach and myself today on our coaching call, we weren't talking about Massanutten and we weren't talking about Pinhoti. Mm-hmm. We were talking about, hey, we got a big year next year, right? We got to stay healthy. We got to accumulate a ton of miles this year. We have to accumulate a ton of vert. And not only that, we have to pick out 6 100s that are very similar. She like, I like doing mountain 100s. She's like, dude, you can't do a mountain 100 this month. And then 2 months later, you're going to go do a flat road. Like, we're going to have to get specific across the year, you know what I mean? And do a specific set just from those adaptations to try to acclimate to that. But I'll be honest with you, that's a great question. I have no idea what it's going to take physically. I know what doing one 100 took physically, and it was a lot, you know, and I know two 100s this year is going to be a lot. And I know probably the hardest part of my 100 was the recovery. Not only physically, I mean, I felt like somebody beat me with baseball bats for days after. I had to be carried into my apartment. And what did that really lead to? It really led to a big dip in my mindset, because I train every day. I lift every day. I run every day except one day. My coach does make me take one day off. Sometimes I listen. But I think the recovery is probably more of what I'm concerned about on that question. Maybe not so much what it's going to take physically, but what does that look like from the recovery of these races and being able to get back up and keep going?
That is what is physical about it. Recovery is the physical side of this. And so we've had multiple guests in the past that have done, I mean, many hundreds in a year. And I'm thinking of Sandra Smith's husband, Mike Smith, who's done 200 100s in his lifetime. He's covered that number. And Ray Sanchez, that we talked about earlier, where he doesn't train much during the week. He just does a 100-mile run on the weekend, it seems like. And he was doing them every other week, it felt like, some of his weeks and stuff. And so
there are, Glaze, Paul Johnson. Yeah,
there are some true ultra runners out there that their entire running is built on their weekends of 100-mile runs. And so it is doable. And it's how they have maintained a high volume, though, throughout the course of the year that has supported that as well. But they do, with the exception of Andy, they do embrace the recovery side of it. Andy doesn't ever take a day off, it doesn't seem like.
What a savage.
That, right. But I do think that when it comes to the type of training you're going to be doing for this, it's going to be a lot of just low maintenance miles between the hundreds that are every 2 months, and really maximizing your recovery between the two. And I think mentally, that could be tough for you because of the downtime it's going to feel like you have to take going into that as well. That I think will be a stretch.
Yeah, 100% from a physical training standpoint, you hit the nail on the head, right? It's, you're going to do a race, you're going to have a recovery phase, you're going to do a race. You're going to do a race. Like, there's not going to be VO2 max phases. We're not going to have a lactate threshold phase. It's like, dude, you're literally, we got to keep you healthy. Number one, keep you healthy. Race, recover, race, recover, race, recover. So yeah, 100% from a physical standpoint, and you hit the nail on the head. The mental will be much, that's going to be the big battle, you know, going into it. But it is my hope that with three 100s under my belt, just like anything, right? My first 50K wrecked me. Now I can go out on the weekend and run a 50K and be running again on Monday, you know? So it is my hope that my body will acclimate and be able to adapt better as we build up into that.
So the word that jumped out to me was adaptation. And I immediately thought of some of the other ones that we talked about that have done long, sustained, difficult efforts, right? I've talked to Mike Wardian, and we're seeing what Paul's doing right now. He seems like he's picking up steam. And he does things. And it seems like in those, adaptation is the key. It's like over time, they're like, oh, okay, the body's starting to figure this out. And so it'd be interesting to see how you tackle it. Because obviously 8 weeks is far enough apart that you're going to have to manage that, right? It's like, okay, do you keep adding the load to try to keep the adaptation going? Or do you fully recover and then go wreck yourself again? So I think I'll be very curious to see how you manage that piece. But I do have a question. And so we want to talk about a couple of the tactical things to this. So I understand the mission. I heard what you said of, hey, here's the mission. It's not as important that Trey runs, you know, 50, 100-milers. But I still have the question. Does a DNF count? Or do you have to reaccomplish?
Dude, the first thought in my head was absolutely not. I can't lie. But the mission is to share the love and life of Jesus Christ. But with that first, literally, as soon as you said that, I said, absolutely not, my brain. Like, I didn't even, it. So no, it doesn't count. So if I DNF for 100, if I DNF Massanutten, then we got to run Virginia back, man. It's a great question.
My brain knew
the answer. Yeah, do a flatter one. I know, it's like, I don't know. I'm just so drawn to the mountains, man. And that, I don't know. I know the flat ones are a different beast too, so.
They're still 100 probably miles.
Yeah, 100 miles. Yeah, I know. It's like, I don't think any of them are easy. Let's be honest here.
So follow-up question. Okay, so I know now how you feel about the DNF, right? Because regardless of the mission, got it. And to me, that makes sense. Like, hey, I'm going to do this thing. didn't quite get it. I'll go back. But like we talked about, so where you are in your life, single guy, you're young, you've got the focus. This is a long-term mission. So one of the things we were talking about is like, hey, are you giving, or have you thought about like how much latitude you're giving yourself to pivot down the road if things change? Dude, you could, you know, you might meet the woman of your dreams tomorrow. Yeah. And
like the girl you're running the marathon with.
She's not into runners, you know, like, yeah, I mean,
yeah, that's a very good question. You know, and I think about those things a lot, but going off my past, guys, I'm somebody who truly needs a lot of focus and purpose in life. And yes, I understand this is a, you know, that's why I preface everything with Lord willing that I can do this and I'm alive long enough to do it. But all I can say is that right now, this is the mission that I'm supposed to be on. And I know that, and I know that in my heart, and I know that in my soul. And if God has me pivot in some direction in the future for something, then, you know, I got to follow suit there. You know, something that I love to share with people is nobody gets to tell you what God says to you, right? And follow his voice, follow the whisper that he guides you through life with. So you're right. There could be things that change. I could have a massive injury, but I do know in this current spot in my life, and that's the only time I can speak from, is me without huge purpose and huge goals and huge mission, I'll start to feel like that lost kid again.
I love the answer that you just gave. And one of the reasons getting to know you and discuss, one of the thoughts that I was having is like, oh, his identity in this case is not the 5100s. Like you said, it's kind of the vessel, but the risk, of course, of tying it to that is if it doesn't start to work, or what if people think I'm failing or whatever. I don't hear that in your voice, right? If things change, they change because you know your mission is where it's aligned. 5100s is the goal now, but that is not the new identity. And I think that that's really important.
100%.
So one thing to keep in mind, we mentioned Paul Johnson a few minutes ago. His mission that he's on right now is to raise money for mental health. And I think it's for the Red, White, and Blue Foundation. He's trying to raise $1 million for, and he's crossing, doing a transcon from LA to somewhere.
New York,
somewhere on the East Coast. And so he's doing a transcon for that to, like I said, raise money for mental health. And one of the things though, that when you put a message out there, and you have a message as well about your faith, when you put that message out there, you deal with haters, and haters are going to hate. Like, how do you plan to deal with haters kind of ragging you?
Sounds cliche, but you see there's a big smile on my face.
I know, but it's okay.
And what I was going to say is I'm genuinely going to send them love back. Mm-hmm. And I mean that, you know, from the bottom of my heart. When we truly understand, you know, when we truly step back and we understand when people say stuff hateful to us, when people talk down to us, that's just this internal reflection of themselves. You know, one of my favorite quotes is, the world is a mirror, not a window. Every time I talk and speak, you know, I say, what's up, beautiful human beings? Like, that's how I lead every conversation usually that I'm in, you know, with my Bible study, with my, when I walk into my gym and it's packed full classes, I'm like, what's up, you beautiful human beings? Well, the only reason I can say that is because I view myself like that. I view myself as a child of God, right? I view myself as a beautiful human being. And I share that with you guys because I know if somebody's hating on the mission, if somebody's hating on me, they're talking down to me, all I got to do is step back for a split second, for 1 second, and understand, like, man, they got something going on right now. How do I know that? Because I was that guy, man. I've been that guy. We've all been that guy. And obviously, I don't have hate at some massive level, but who knows where this leads. And maybe this podcast will remind me of this statement, right? Because it's easy to forget. But if we can all remember that, you know, nobody searching for better or trying to do better is talking down or hating on anybody's mission because they're working on their own. But I always bring myself back to that simple quote. And it's the world is a mirror. It's not a window. The things that I internalize, I see out into the world. When I was hating on myself, and I'm going to hate on others, man. I see myself as a beautiful child of God that gets up and gets after it, then I'm going to see that potential in everybody I run into.
Yeah, I think that is the right answer. One of the things that drives me a little insane is that, you know, our world of social media and our world of just negativity that we have is typically the haters going to hate type thing is often fueled by just more negativity. And that the biggest way to kind of squash all that is to kind of just return it with positivity and with love. And you can actually dispel a lot of those negative feelings from others
by not engaging with your own negativity yourself, if you will. And so I think that's the appropriate answer. I think if you look at it as being a reflection, as opposed to being a condemnation of yourself, I think that's the appropriate way to go as well.
I totally agree. And to be honest, it's pretty shocking sometimes, I think, to see just how hurtful people can be. I don't know if you watched the Iron Cowboy documentary when he first did his thing. People are very quick to say, hey, you didn't do what you said you're going to do, or this is a fake, or, you know, whatever, especially when people are doing this incredible thing. Paul Johnson's going through something similar right now. Dude, I love your answer.
Well, that's because hurt people hurt people.
That's it.
Amen. Right?
And so I think that's the big thing that we can all learn from. Because I'll be honest, there's times when even reading the hate comments, I want to hate, right? I want to be like, no, man, like, you know, negativity breeds the negativity. So yeah, I love how firm you are. I love how quick you answered that. And for everybody listening, he literally had a big old grin.
That's the appropriate response.
On his face when that question was being answered. I love it. So let me ask this, because we do want to talk about some of the tactical stuff for Massanutten, but how do people get involved in Run with Christ, right? Because you're going to be doing this thing. I know you're going to be talking about it. If people want to follow along, is there a way for people to get involved? Like, how does that work?
Absolutely. So there's a lot of like little things you can do to get involved. And it's simply, man, you know, everybody in today's time are taking photos of their watch. They're sharing on their Strava. And just a simple hashtag RWC, just a simple hashtag Run with Christ. You know, I think that means the world, because, you know, once again, I want to detach myself from this. It's not about me. It's about, hey, if somebody sees on Strava RWC or hashtag Run with Christ, like, what do you mean Run with Christ, right? And what does that mean? That means we're never running alone. And that's, you know, in life and in running, but Christ is always with us. The Holy Spirit resides within us. So that's the lowest, you know, easiest thing you can do, right? Is you can just hashtag RWC on some of your runs or however you see fit. Secondly to that, so we do have Run with Christ apparel and gear, and we are working on a new drop right now. All the proceeds from that will go to help fund and do some of this travel, because as you guys know, this is going to be a very expensive thing as well. So we didn't want to do anything that's like, you know, and no hate or foul to anybody, but we didn't want to do like a GoFundMe or like just raise money. It's like, yo, we would rather make really cool items for people. And it's like, hey, you get a cool item, some cool merch that you can rock and talk about it when people ask you about it. And then just all the proceeds off the top will go to support crew and travel and food and races and things like that. And then thirdly, we will have a link that is set up to where you can sign up for like our newsletter. And we'll send out, we're planning on sending out, you know, I know we didn't get into this here, but I am a coach. Well, we're going to send out running tips, nutrition tips, you know, Run with Christ events, where we're headed next, when we drop new apparel and things like that. So those are probably three of the, you know, the easiest ways. Or if you see a post on social media, man, and it relates to you, like, just share it. Like, that goes such a long ways. You know, there's a lot of ways you can get involved without investing a dollar. And then if you do, you know, you see some gear that you like or that you would rock, it would mean the world to us if you would pick that up, not only to help fund the mission, but more so when people see you out in public wearing it, they're like, dude, that's cool. What is that? And then you get to share that story with them. This is about planting seeds, man. And I want to see the seeds get planted everywhere. So those are probably the easiest ways to support.
Love it. Where's the, I'm obviously shooting to us, but if they want the merch, where do they go? How do they find it?
So I'll drop you over a link, but it'll be on tscgear.com. We have our site. We only launch it during launch periods. But I'll shoot you over a link where people can sign up, and I'll send it directly to their phone whenever we make our new launch, which we got some really cool stuff dropping at the end of this week, actually.
Fantastic. Looking forward to seeing it.
I am going to move to Massanutten 100.
Let's do it.
And the reason I'm going to move that is because you are on a mission, and it's the next one on the plate, if you will, and it's time to serve it up and to figure out what's going to happen. And so you have done the Beast of the East 100, which is your first, and you're now taking on your second. Early stages of a mission that is an incredible endeavor ahead of you, right? But like you said, you know, after you get three underneath your belt, you're going to keep learning. Well, now you have one under your belt. You're going to take on the Massanutten that has 18,000 feet of gain, has a 36-hour cutoff. You said you like mountains. You got another mountain coming at you. What did you learn from Beast of the East experience that you plan to apply at Massanutten?
That's a great question. I think from the experience in and of itself from Beast of the East, I think the biggest thing that I learned, number one, going into the Beast of the East, if anybody doesn't know this, you're not going to want to eat gels for 100 miles. that was, you know, one that you hear, but in all seriousness, that was a big one that, like, I didn't understand how much my taste buds were going to change. So definitely during training, you know, on all my long runs, my big runs, we're experimenting with different nutrition protocols, different fueling strategies. I'm somebody that's probably like a lot of people who I love getting up in the morning and running fasted. Like, I love that, you know. I think anybody embarking on a 100-mile race, it's really interesting that you can train your gut. Like, you can, it might feel really uncomfortable at first, but you can actually eat a meal and go run. And the more you do that, your body will get better at shuttling that food around, which is a really cool concept. So that's a big one that I'll move into the next one, you know, the next race with. Trekking poles that I used during Beast of the East were either a blessing in disguise or a nuisance. And I mean that when you get on very rocky terrain, like Rock Talk Trail at Beast of the East, you want to throw those things off the mountain because they're absolutely useless. Like,
I fell there because of my pole.
Dude, they really are. Like, and Massanutten, from what I hear, is very, very rocky. So I bought a quiver. This is a huge ticket. I'm going to get a quiver and carry my poles because I didn't have a quiver last time. So that was a really, really big takeaway. And other than that, I think training went really, really well. I think that the piece of, if you're going to do a big event like this, I can't stress enough like how powerful a crew is. Like, I really can't. Like, it is one of the most amazing things. And I know I keep coming back to this about Jesus, but ultra marathons are the most Christian sport, whether you believe in Jesus Christ or not. And I want to explain why. If you look back at what Jesus did for us, or did with his disciples, washing their feet, feeding them, all these different things. And you go to a modern day 100-mile race, there are random strangers that will take your shoes off, put food in your mouth, fill your bottles up. And it is the most Christ-like love you can find anywhere on the planet. I'll never forget at Beast of the East. I was 80 miles in, and this random volunteer aid station woman, I'll never forget this, she grabbed me by the cheeks and looked me directly in the eyes. And she said, "Are you okay?" With the most genuine care and love. And I just remember being like, I was just shocked that I could just see passion in her eyes and her voice. And I was like, "I'm good. Are you okay?" You know, I'm like out of it. And I just think, like I said, having the crew, I'm so glad I didn't forget to share that with you guys about, if you look at the story of Jesus and the way that he loved us and the way that he taught us how to love, I have never been in any other environment where that love has been portrayed like an ultra marathon.
It's so true, though. It took me back to my first 100-mile, or actually our first 100-mile at Umstead. It rained all day. And I remember, and it was a buddy, it wasn't a stranger, and he was actually on our podcast, Tracy McCullen. Did he pull my shoes off? They were disgusting. My feet were disgusting and wet. And he was just like powdering them, fingers in between the toes. And I remember thinking, like, man, this is a true friend right here, right? This is like showing some real love, because day to day, we're not going to do that for each other.
He's a better friend than I was.
That's right.
That's pretty nasty, dude. Between the toes?
Yeah. Oh, that's, yeah. It was between. I was like,
that's a little over the top.
But you make a great point, man. It is an environment where people are looking out for each other in a way that you don't see in everyday life. And it is inspiring. It's part of the reason that we absolutely love this community. Mm-hmm. But let's go back to training. So I want to know how you're training for Massanutten. I also want to know, do we already establish you're a big gym guy? You own a strength training facility. So talk us through kind of a standard week look for you in terms of running volume, strength training. How do you break that up?
Yeah, for sure. So right now on Mondays, typically with my current split, I'll be coming off, or Mondays will be a leg day for me. And I'll usually do, like today I had a 10-mile run, or yesterday was Monday. I had a 10-mile run yesterday with some steady state intervals in it. So some VO2 max work. Tuesday, I take a rest day when I listen to my coach. I hit legs hard Monday and a hard run. So that way I'm a little bit more fatigued. So I'll be more apt to take a rest day. So Tuesdays are no running. And then I'll hit a full back workout, so a full hypertrophy back training session. Wednesdays will be another tempo run, and I'll hit a full chest workout. So I'll hit a full hypertrophy bodybuilding chest workout. Thursdays, we will be hitting a recovery run, so typically 45 to 60 minutes, pretty easy, pretty chill. and I'll hit a full shoulder workout. Friday, if anybody does not know, is always Arm Farm Friday. Okay, it's good for the soul. It'll brighten your day every Friday. So Friday, we have Arm Farm Friday. First thing in the morning, I do that with my father. And then I'll typically have anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half, 60 to 90 minutes recovery run. Saturdays and Sundays are my big days. So on Saturdays, you know, depending on where I'm at in training, like this weekend, I'll have a 3-hour run on Saturday. I'll get into the most steep technical trail. Another huge piece of advice to anybody training for ultras, especially if you're training for a mountain ultra, your road miles don't really equate to much. Get out there, get some time on your feet on the, like, Saturday, I'm going to go find the most steep technical trail I can find and just worry about time. Anywhere from 3 to 7 hours, depending on where I'm at in the training phase. This week's 3, next week I got 6. Sunday, we have a Run with Christ meetup. So we have a group run. We meet up at 6 a.m. in the city I live. And we have community, we pray, we run. That's anywhere from about 4 to 7 miles, pretty easy. I just run with whoever shows up. And then later that night, I'll go do either a vert session or anywhere from a 90-minute to 2-hour trail run. So I have a double day on Sunday. So the weekends are really stacked up. Monday's a really hard day, and then I train legs on Monday to really consolidate all that leg fatigue to that those couple days.
You know, I know he's a strength guy. I asked him about running, and he said, "Well, Monday's leg day." That was the very first thing.
Yeah, man.
So. Are you lifting legs before running, or are you running? Are you running on tired legs, or are you running and then lifting legs later?
Run. I'll always run first. So yeah, I always prioritize that. Now upper body stuff during the week, I'll do. Like, I'm fortunate I get to work out with my father. Like, me and my dad worked out at 4 a.m. this morning. So those are times we really get to spend together. So if it's upper body, a lot of times I'll do, you know, I'll lift upper body really early in the morning, and then I'll run later in the day. And honestly, guys, I look at all that as ultra training.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. It's all mental endurance. It's all fatigue. It's all, like, I know, as you guys know, like, your body's going to be beat up in an ultra marathon. So, like, I was actually in there this morning hitting back, and I'm like, this is good ultra training. And I train more like bodybuilding hypertrophy, not because it's beneficial to running at all, but just because I love it, man. Like, I love running, and I love training like a bodybuilder. Like, those are just two things I really, really enjoy.
There's benefits to the strength, though. And obviously, we just had Chase Price on, and that is a guy that is running flat, fast, backing it up to mountain, right? And then pick the win at URE. And as we discussed there, I just think the strength is such a foundation. So yeah, I still love that you said leg day before anything.
it's a lot of volume. I kind of like what your coach is doing there. You've got a 90-minute workout on Friday, 90-minute run on Friday. You got a 3 to 6 hour on Saturday. You have two runs on Sunday. That's going to be anywhere between 90 minutes to 3 hours, probably between the two runs. And then on Monday, you've got another 10-mile run is what you talked about. So another 90 to 120 minutes, right, depending on your pace. And so, I mean, you're putting in close to 9 hours, maybe 6 to 9 hours, depending on if it's a 3 to 6 hour run, right, on those 4 days. And so that's a pretty hefty weekend. And so a lot of people think in terms of a long run Saturday or a long run Sunday, but the bookend of the Monday leg day plus Monday tempo run is a hard weekend. And I would call that Monday a hard weekend run. As well, I think that ties together, which is great, which is why the Tuesday is critical for you to take off. It's also why that Thursday run that you have of being about 45 to 60 minutes as a easy run or recovery run is really important also, because you need those 2 days to recover and to prepare for the weekend. So your coach is doing some great training with you. It sounds like good, solid work that you're doing and putting in.
Yeah, which is kind of the adaptation thing again, because, like, you know, this time last year, my body could not handle all that, you know. And people that listening, like, I think strength training's quote unquote easy for me, guys, just because that's my background. So, like, if you're a runner and, like, you don't come from a strength training background, I don't recommend you adding 5 strength days to your running program every week. Not a good idea, right? But that's just what I'm used to. I mean, that's just like running or lifting is just always my base. Like, it'll always be there. Like, that's just part of me. But so if you're listening and you're just a runner, I do not recommend adding that kind of strength training regimen to your running workouts.
Yeah, but even your coach, what they're doing with you is super wise. They're respecting your desire to strength train by giving you the Tuesday, Thursday as lighter days, because that's 2 of your 5 strength days, you know, that you're working out. And so it's the way they're bookending it with your strength routine is pretty good. It's solid. I mean, it's brilliant, I think.
Coach Ann is she's an integral part of the Realm of Christ mission, but she actually got a second place at Moab last year. She's just an awesome ultra runner in the shadows, man. And I can't say enough great things about her. She's a perfect fit. We have a really good relationship too, from a coaching standpoint. Like, she obviously knows my knowledge. She also knows that I typically err on the side of pushing too hard, you know, but she has never shot down anything. You know, she wants to help people who really want to push their limits. And I'm glad that you brought that up, man. I can't say enough great things about her, and the way that she handles our relationship as a coach-client relationship has been amazing.
So we're getting close, so we need to wrap it up here shortly. But you mentioned nutrition, you know, gels, the whole race is out, right? You've been training on some things. So just tell us real quick, what do you see as your go-to, as you're aiming at Massanutten? Couple go-to things that you have lined up that you think are going to work for you?
I usually use Tailwind as a good base. That's a really good lesson that I learned at Beast of the East. If you guys don't know, the coolers are typically not mixed and concentrated the same as you would in training, which freaks me out as a guy who tracks a lot of his nutrition. So I'm actually going to experiment with using straight water this go around, taking salt tabs as just purely my electrolytes. And then for food and fuel, Uncrustables are a go-to for me. They digest well. They're really easy. You don't have to make anything. So that's usually always a base. And then BPN Go Bars, I can't recommend enough. I ate a whole box of those at Beast of the East. Super light, super tasty, digest really, really well. So between BPN Go Bars, Uncrustables, and then some Tailwind mixed in will probably be the big base of fuel there for sure.
I think Uncrustables would go out of business if it wasn't for ultra running.
Dude, they're so good. I only eat them when I run ultras, but
that's so what I mean. Good. It's like, yeah, I mean, you don't, but when you're there, like, yeah, I have to have Uncrustables. They are everywhere at an ultra.
So good, man. So I think it's wise to stay away from, you know, you definitely don't want to eat random stuff, and that's never a good idea. So
I'm so glad you mentioned the Tailwind thing. So I volunteer at aid stations a lot too. I know that people like Tailwind in theirs. We will have Tailwind probably at our igloos as well. It is incredibly difficult as a volunteer to mix it like you would in your shaker bottle yourself at your house, right? Because it's a 5-gallon drum and you're taking one whole pack and you're trying to mix it in there and it doesn't dissolve. And eventually what it does is it starts to settle, because if you're running and carrying it, you're constantly shaking the thing. Right. And so people who complain about Tailwind and stuff that get sick with it, they will often tell you they got sick of it from a race experience.
Because they probably got the real.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you depend on when it gets filled,
so if you're either going to get it really light or really strong. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I wouldn't count on Tailwind, because I went into that race doing that. I wouldn't count on Tailwind. However, you can get those double serving packs, put those in your packs, fill them up with water, and then fill that up.
Yeah. Agreed.
All right, man. So we already talked about it doesn't count if you DNF.
Amen.
Preach it up.
So do you have a time goal? Yeah.
Great question. No, I do want to improve. I really do want to improve. I did, I think, BC's in 31:50 something. So about 32 hours. Massanutten, let me just go ahead and put it out into the universe. Sub 30 is my goal. And I want to improve at everyone. I do want to make that clear. Like, I am an athlete. We know the mission, but I also know how strong of a person we can be with the Spirit leading our life. So my goal throughout this process is to only get better. And I know I can. My running's improved immensely just this year, just from putting the work in and the time in. I'm, like I said, very new to running. I don't consider myself experienced at all from a time perspective. You know, a couple years is nothing. You know, I've been strength training for 8 years.
So one thing to keep in mind when you have a time goal for a race is you will often start looking at the watch and start thinking to yourself, I'm behind pace. I'm not where I think I should be. And that can get in your head too. And so the reason he asks is if the goal is to finish versus a time goal, at some point being comfortable with the fallback of finishing within 36 hours of Massanutten, for example, versus trying to get it to sub 30.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I appreciate that feedback.
That's all I got.
Awesome. Well, look, man, this has been such an incredible conversation. Again, I think reading words on paper did not translate to the guy, you know, that ended up before us, inspired by your focus, by your mission. And again, just by how sure you are of who you are and knowing kind of your background, where you came from. It's an incredible thing to see. I'm going to talk to the listeners really quick. Thank you so much for plugging in. We hope you found value from this. if you have, tell all your friends all the good stuff. But we will put in all the links down below, because we want you to go follow Trey, follow the run with Christ, and plug in for all that stuff. But Trey, thanks so much, man. Our motto, as you know, is just show up. And with the run with Christ, dude, you're going to be showing up for at least 50 times, right?
A whole lot. And all the training leading up.
So Trey, thanks so much. We're going to keep you around for a fun game with Patreon. To everybody else, we will talk soon. Cuts.
We're massive button. Oh gosh.
Yeah, take a second.
Good news is we edit, but we're not going to edit this out because we want to see all that choke.
Man.
I just bought these earbuds from Walmart like 20 minutes ago because my car got stolen and my AirPods were in there. So you guys are such a good duo. I love it.
Dude, you made it easy.
Except for the choking spell.
Yeah, dude, I'm still struggling over here.
This happens. I mean, that's what happens to my fans.
You start talking about nipples on your Adam's apple, they're out, bro.
You're like, I can't do this. When did puberty start?
I guess right now, man.
You know, we're about to wipe that smile straight off your face.
All right. Good luck, bro. Good luck.
The Pinote, or how do you say that?
Yep. Pinote. That's how Pinote. I say it. I don't know if that's right, but
Pinote, Pinhootie. Somebody's going to contact me.
Yeah. Say,
right? I don't think Pinhootie's right. But
Pinote, Pin something.
I've listened to like every podcast. I feel like I've heard your voice just a million times, man.
You just got all real serious now. It's like going to get serious on us. Like, stop that.
That was just his listening face. We talked before about messing up. Luckily, our boy Steve Saunders probably cleaned that up for me. But
at least two or three spots.
A couple little spots, but that's all right.
Thanks, Steve.
Dude, hey, man. Now I know what goes on behind the scenes. Steve crushes it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You have no idea. All right, listen, thank you so much. We recognize the fact that you are probably just hanging on just for a couple more minutes as you're finishing up your run. But really, we do want to give you a huge thank you for the constant support that you've shown us. We hear you and we feel you. And the best way for us to continue to grow is for you to share us with your friends. Tell them what you put in your ears when you're out there on a long run. Hit the like button, leave us a comment, leave a review, and give us some direct feedback on what you like about the show and also what you don't like. We're here to improve and do it for you.
And it really means the world. And listen, if you would like to support financially, you can connect with us on Patreon at patreon.com/theultrarunningguys, or you can use the support link in the show notes. Any and all support goes directly back into growing the show and helping us get better at what we love to do, which is to serve all of you. And with that, finish up that run, get cleaned up, and just show up.
Clean.
Clean.